Speaking on this program is Brother Winford Claiborne.
Thank you very much. There are few, if any, more serious social, moral, and spiritual problems facing the church and the world than divorce. It affects every segment of society, the homes, the churches, and the schools, and destroys the lives of millions of people, both adults and children. Since our homes serve as the very foundation of society, how can a nation or a culture survive when so many of its homes are in almost total disarray? Our emphasis today in this lesson will be the evils of divorce. If this lesson raises in your minds questions about divorce you would like to ask, please let me hear from you. I may not know the answers to your questions, but I will do my best to find them. The problem of divorce in our nation has not always been so serious as it is today. When the United States government began to keep statistics on marriage, divorce, and remarriage about 100 years ago, the total number of divorces was approximately 5,000. That number was far too many, but almost none compared to today's tragic situation. In 1976, for the first time in the history of our nation, there were 1 million divorces. 1 million. The number of divorces in the year 2000 was about 1,250,000. The raw numbers have increased, but the percentage seems to have decreased slightly. Any decrease is encouraging, but we have a long way to go to correct the heartbreaking divorce situation in our country. When God ordained marriage in the beginning of the human family, He meant for marriages to be permanent. He commanded, "Therefore shall a man leave his father and mother, and cleave unto his wife, and they two shall be one flesh." Genesis 2:24. Jesus Christ endorsed God's original pattern for the home, and then added, "What therefore God has joined together, let not man put asunder." Matthew 19:6. Paul commanded the Ephesians, and all subsequent Christian husbands, to leave father and mother and to cleave to their wives. Ephesians 5:31. The Greek word Jesus and Paul used means to stick like glue. The word appears only 4 times in the New Testament and is translated either cleave or be joined. As you can readily see, God's original pattern for the home did not include divorce. But Jesus did allow divorce for sexual immorality. Matthew 19:9. The Old Testament prophets strongly condemned the moral behavior of the Israelite people. They expressed God's disapproval of stealing, murder, and adultery that were rampant among God's people. Even the leaders in the nation were rebellious and disobedient. The prophet Jeremiah described conditions immediately preceding the Babylonian exile. "For the land is full of adulterers. For because of swearing, the land mourns. The pleasant places of the wilderness are dried up, and their course is evil, and their might is not right. For both prophet and priest are profane. Yea, in my house have I found wickedness, says the Lord. I have seen also in the prophets of Jerusalem an horrible thing. They commit adultery and walk in lies. They strengthen also the hands of evildoers, that none return from his wickedness. They are all of them unto me as Sodom, and the inhabitants thereof as Gomorrah." Jeremiah 23:10-14. After the Israelites returned from their 70-year stay in Babylon, they went back to many of their old ways. Among their transgressions, they married outside the family of God. Judah has dealt treacherously, and an abomination is committed in Israel and in Jerusalem. For Judah has profaned the sanctuary of the Lord, which he loved, and has married the daughter of a strange god. The Lord will cut off the man who does this, any witness or answer, out of the tabernacles of Jacob, and him who offers unto the Lord of hosts. Malachi 2:11-12. Why did not the Jews learn from the stupid mistakes of King Solomon? the book of Kings records the foolishness of the wisest man who ever lived. But King Solomon loved many strange women, together with the daughter of Pharaoh, women of the Moabites, Ammonites, Edomites, Zidonians, and Hittites, of the nation concerning which the Lord said unto the children of Israel, "For surely they will turn away your hearts after their gods." Solomon held fast to these in love. 1 Kings 11, 1 and 2. Joshua warned the Israelites of the dangers of marrying foreign women. "They shall be snares and traps unto you, and scourges in your sides, and thorns in your eyes, until you perish from off the good land which the Lord your God has given you." Joshua 23, 12 and 13. But marrying the daughters of strange gods was not the only problem relating to marriage in the nation of Israel. Many of the Israelites were divorcing their wives. Because of their blatant rebellion against God's will, the worship of the Jews was not acceptable in the sight of God. Malachi said that the Jews were covering the altar with tears, with weeping, and with crying out. But the Lord was not impressed with their worship. The Jews seemed not to understand why God had rejected their worship. Malachi explains, "Because the Lord has been witness between you and the wife of your youth, against whom you have dealt treacherously. Yet is she not your companion and the wife of your covenant? And why did God make one? Yet had he the residue of the Spirit, and why one? That he might have a godly seed. Therefore take heed to your spirit, and let no one deal treacherously with the wife of his youth." Malachi 2, 14 and 15. Malachi, by divine authority, urged the Israelites not to deal treacherously with their covenant companions. He provides his reasons for telling the Israelites not to leave their wives. "For the Lord God of Israel says, I hate putting away." Malachi 2, 16. The expression, "I hate putting away," really means, "I hate divorce." Most modern versions so render the Hebrew. Some people are offended by our use of the word hate. But we must hate what God hates and love what God loves. Jesus said to the church at Ephesus, "This you have, that you hate the deeds of the Nicolaitans, which I also hate." Revelation 2, 6. If God hates false doctrine and ungodly deeds, what should be the attitude of Christians toward them? Should not Christian parents teach their children to hate divorce? How should gospel preachers deal with the great divorce plague which is sweeping our country? Some modern preachers and other church leaders argue that God is not so strict about divorce under the new covenant as he was under the old. After all, they sometimes argue, we are under grace, not law. So God has apparently changed his mind toward divorce, or at least he is more lenient toward it. How could anyone read the Lord's Sermon on the Mount and reach that conclusion? "You have heard that it has been said, whosoever shall put away his wife, let him give her a writing of divorcement. But I say unto you, that whosoever shall put away his wife, saving for the cause of fornication or sexual immorality, causes her to commit adultery. And whosoever shall marry her who is divorced commits adultery." Matthew 5, 31 and 32. The truth is, Jesus was much more strict on the topic of divorce and remarriage than the law of Moses. In his famous discourse on marriage, divorce, and remarriage, Jesus outlined God's original pattern for the home. He gave his authoritative endorsement to that pattern, and then stated very firmly, "What therefore God has joined together, let not man put asunder." Matthew 19, 6. The Pharisees wanted to know why Moses permitted divorce under certain circumstances. Jesus explained, "Moses, because of the hardness of your hearts, suffered you to put away your wives, but from the beginning it was not so. And I say unto you, whosoever shall put away his wife, except it be for fornication or sexual immorality, and shall marry another, commits adultery. and whoso marries her who is put away commits adultery. Matthew 19, 8 and 9. It ought to be obvious from these verses that God still hates divorce, but he allows it for sexual unfaithfulness. The word except in Matthew 19, 9 permits a divorced person to remarry only if that person's spouse has been guilty of sexual immorality, either incest or adultery or homosexuality. The word if in this verse means if and only if. According to the Greek text, there is one and only one reason for remarrying: sexual infidelity on the part of one spouse. Did you know that most denominational groups at one time held that view? In modern times, many church leaders, including some among churches of Christ, just go with the flow. Such leaders are guilty of falling in with the fleeting fashions of the world. Romans 12, 2. You have probably heard many of the excuses couples in our day give for ending their marriages by divorce. Dr. Diane Medved's excellent book, The Case Against Divorce, lists 7 excuses some people give for getting divorces. First, we are not well matched. Page 123. Should that fact not have been discovered before the couple said their marriage vows? Are there any two people on earth who are perfectly matched? We have to adjust and compromise, or no marriage would last. I wonder how many times this excuse is offered when one person in the couple has found a more attractive partner. Second, I must pursue this opportunity for the love of my life. Page 127. Have you ever heard someone on television or elsewhere say, "I have found my soulmate"? Our love is so powerful that we simply cannot resist it. It is bigger than both of us. The sad fact is that many people often yield to the lusts of their flesh and disregard the commitments they have made to their partners. Those people are guilty of dealing treacherously with their covenant mates. Most people may have at one time in their marriages been tempted to stray, but they have the moral courage to resist. God does not overlook such pitiful excuses. What therefore God has joined together, let not man put asunder. Matthew 19:6. Third, I need my independence, sexual fulfillment, career, or whatever. Page 133. Most of us want to experience fulfillment in all areas of our lives, but we must find fulfillment in the way God has ordained. We're not free in the eyes of God and of good people to trample underfoot the rights of others. When we divorce our mates in search of independence, sexual fulfillment, and our careers, we are being selfish, cruel, and destructive. Would it not be more honorable to work within the family we have helped to establish, especially if there are children involved? God will hold us accountable for breaking the hearts and lives of others. Fourth, we're always fighting. Page 141. Are people so immature that they cannot control their anger? The Bible lays great stress on self-control. For example, Solomon said, "He who is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he who rules his spirit than he who takes a city." Proverbs 16:32. Fighting among intelligent and honorable people is totally inexcusable. I know there are differences in all marriages, but fighting makes absolutely no sense. We must grow into maturity in all relationships, especially a relationship as intimate as marriage. If we cannot control our tempers, would it not make sense to ask for advice from someone who can help us? Fifth, we've grown apart. Page 145. All marriage counselors, preachers, psychologists, psychiatrists, and others know that some couples grow apart. I remember a couple I knew when I was a child. The man was a poor farmer, but a good man. His wife continued her education until she had earned her undergraduate degree. When she had accomplished that goal, she decided that her husband was no longer on her level of education and social graces. She divorced him. I would like to say that such incidents are rare, but they really are not. Couples need to think through their differences in education, in culture, and in other areas of their lives, and find some resolution of their differences. There is no reason for divorce under these circumstances. Sixth, you're driving me crazy with your despicable habit. Page 148. That habit may be smoking, drinking, or vulgar speech. One wonders in such cases if the person complaining about the mate's bad habit thought about that bad habit during the dating period. A handsome man who drinks a little or much may sweep a young woman off her feet, but she needs to use enough good sense not to marry a man whose habits will irritate her. If you have trouble around people who drink or smoke or use illegal drugs, please do not marry someone who engages in these habits. Even if you do not divorce that person, you may have more heartaches than you ever dreamed possible. Finally, I need to be appreciated. Page 154. We all want to be appreciated. I like for Molly to tell me I have taught a good Bible class or preached a good sermon. She wants me to tell her how beautiful she looks and how wonderful she is at whatever she does. I have many faults, perhaps more than any one person should have. But there is one fault I have meticulously avoided: not telling Molly how much I love her. I make a point of telling her every day how much she means to me. But there are spouses, especially of the male variety, who neglect to express appreciation for their mate's good qualities. But neglect is not an adequate ground for divorce. In most cases, there are remedies that should be sought for making our homes more pleasant. All of us who have worked with troubled marriages have heard these and many other excuses. We must not ignore excuses, but we should be more concerned about the reasons marriages break apart. I'm devoting the remainder of our time today to examining some of the reasons marriages end in divorce. After working with families for more than 40 years and teaching marriage and family classes on the university level for several years, I am convinced that one of the main reasons marriages go on the rocks is inadequate preparation. How many young people entering the marriage relationship have been taught how to be good husbands and good wives? Tragically, many of our young people enter marriage as if it were a weekend lark. An example may help us to understand how absolutely unprepared some young people are and how little they care about their lack of preparation. Two young people from one of the Carolinas decided to drive to the nation's capital to get married, although why they did remains a mystery. The young man had a friend he wanted to go with him to the marriage. The young woman also wanted to bring along a friend. The two young people who were to accompany the couple to Washington had never met each other before the trip. Sometimes during the trip, the young man said to the young woman he had known for just hours, "Why don't we get married too?" The young woman consented, and they were married. The marriage lasted 2 weeks. Then they decided that they did not love each other and had their marriage annulled. How anyone can have so little respect for such a sacred trust cannot be explained. Such behavior can only be described as being stupid. What if persons going into medicine or law or education had so little preparation for their profession? Many medical specialists have to spend 8 to 10 years beyond their undergraduate education to practice their branch of medicine. And being a good doctor is not more difficult than being a good husband and father or wife and mother. Parents want their children to learn their English or history or science, but make little effort to talk to them about marriage, human sexuality, child rearing, and such like. Do we expect them to learn by osmosis about marriage and the family? One marriage counselor was asked, "Do you think divorce is too easy?" He responded, "No, I think marriage is too easy." By that he meant that young people can't enter marriage without any preparation, with no credit rating, and with low or no moral value. Each semester, as I began my classes on marriage and the family at Freed-Hardeman University, I would ask my students two questions. The first was, how many of you have had courses in your home congregation on dating, mate selection, marriage, child rearing, and such like? Usually between 10 and 15% of those splendid young people have been so privileged. My second question was, how many of you have had anyone, your parents included, to talk with you about your body? The numbers, as you would probably suspect, were almost negligible. And yet parents and church leaders want their young people to have successful marriages. Can that happen with little or no preparation? The number of divorces and unhappy marriages should provide an answer to that question. Tragically, young people in our society are bombarded with moral and spiritual conditions that make it very difficult to have happy, stable, and long-lasting marriages. The moral atmosphere in most American communities does not promote the moral values that are essential for solid relationships, marriage or otherwise. Movies, television, popular songs, books and magazines glorify divorce, or at least the kind of behavior that leads to divorce. Movies depict sexual immorality as if it were normal and even desirable. One author has produced a book that encourages what he calls healthy adultery. People in Hollywood and in some other places change partners as often as they change clothes. I know the stories on television and in the movies are just that, stories. But they have an enormous impact on our young people, especially on immature young people. Those who pretend that such stories have no bearing on young people's behavior are either ignorant or mean, or both. Many marriages break apart because the young people do not have a solid commitment to marriage. Many marriages are actually on the rocks even before the marriage ceremony is completed. Hundreds of couples marry with no intention of staying together, especially if difficulties arise, and they will. They often stay married until someone more attractive comes along. Did you know that some young people actually vow, "I promise to live with you so long as we both shall love"? Every marriage counselor has had married partners to say, "I just do not love him or her anymore." My usual response to such an observation is, "So what? Do you mean to tell me that you have a right to leave her and marry someone else just because you do not love her?" We should understand that love is an essential ingredient of a good marriage, but it is not an essential ingredient of a valid marriage. In most cases, the person making such a statement already has his eye on someone else. He is just looking for an excuse to get rid of his present wife. Another factor contributing to divorce is immaturity. We normally think that a person 22 or 25 years of age is mature enough to make a good husband or a good wife. That is not necessarily so. Some 40-year-olds still act like children. Paul admonished the Corinthian Christians, "Be not children in understanding, howbeit in malice be children, but in understanding be men." 1 Corinthians 14:20. The same apostle wrote to the same church, "Quit you like men." 1 Corinthians 16:13. The expression "quit you like men" comes from the Greek andrizo and means to act like men. In other words, the Corinthian Christians were to be grown up, to be mature. The girl or guy who acts in immature ways before marriage will likely do the same after marriage. Such a partner may be fun during courtship, but will be a burden after marriage. In 1946, Dr. Edward Strecker, chairman of the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Pennsylvania, wrote a very perceptive book with the title, Their Mother's Sons. Please listen to these wise words from Dr. Strecker's book. Because the two contracting parties in a marriage happen to be a mature man and a mature woman does not necessarily ensure the permanence and success of marriage. Nevertheless, such a marriage definitely has a much better chance of survival than if one of the contracting parties is decidedly immature. It is not easy for an adult to live in a close emotional relationship with a child, and it is notably hard to do it within the confines of matrimony. There is a somewhat better chance of success if the husband is the mature partner, particularly if he is very mature. I know of a few men who carry along child-wise fairly well and maintain at least a semblance of family life. Pages 80 and 81. Dr. Strecker tells of having attended weddings where the preacher would say, "If any man can show just cause why they may not be lawfully married, let him speak now or forever hold his peace." He says he has been tempted to stand up and shout, "Stop! I know why they may not be lawfully joined together. The young man cannot fulfill the conditions of the marriage state. He is in love with another woman, his mother, and always will love her more than anything else in the world. It is she he will love and cherish, and not this young woman who stands at his side." Sometimes, Dr. Strecker said, "I can almost see the hand of Mom, whether she was living or dead, reach out and unclasp the hands which had been joined together. And I could almost hear her say, 'You cannot have this man. He belongs to me. I know what is in his heart. I put it there. He is mine forever.'" Pages 92 and 93. Even though men and women may be old enough physically to get married, that does not mean they are mature enough. Woe to the person who marries someone who has not been emotionally separated from his or her parents. You can know for sure that heartaches and headaches will be an integral part of that marriage. If the marriage survives at all, it will take great patience and fortitude on the part of the mature spouse. But the chances of such marriages surviving are slim indeed. My friends, we thank you for listening today. We encourage you to continue to listen. Thank you, and may God richly bless you.